Welcome to Authors of the Pacific Northwest, where we connect Pacific Northwest authors with new listeners and provide advice for aspiring authors on the business of writing. I'm your host, Vicki J. Carter. So, hi there, listeners to the podcast. Thanks so much for coming back this week. This week, I have John Gosch, and I'm absolutely excited to have him on the podcast. So, John, if you want to say hi to everyone.
Hello. Thanks for having me here.
You are so welcome. We're happy to have you. So, John, let's start out with a little bit of background about who you are. So, tell us what state you live in, and if you have an outside job besides being an author, share a little bit about that with us.
Yeah, so I grew up in Longview, Washington. Now I live in Spokane, and I have a job as a resource conservation consultant. We help companies reduce their waste and water and energy impact, which is cool. And then I also work as a freelance book editor, and I do some journalism as well.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I did see that on your website that you're not just an author. You do other writing aspects too. And so for you listeners that are listening, you'll know that I'm from Longview. So John's originally from Longview, but we never met before. So this is kind of exciting. We got connected through other people. So good old Longview.
Yeah, Alan Rose was very kind enough to introduce us. He's a great support for writers in the community.
He really is. He's fantastic. I'm going to get him on the podcast someday soon so that he can share with everybody. His works are fantastic. I love him to death. So John, what would you like new readers that are listening to this podcast for the first time and they don't know you, what's one thing you would like them to know about you up front?
I'd like them to know about me.
That's
well,
a tough question.
I feel like I was born to be a writer. My great uncle was a published author and was a columnist for a long time, and I think I inherited whatever gene drove him to be a writer. I just feel like I knew from about the age of three that I was supposed to write, and that was my gift. And so all these years I've just been trying to just make it come to fruition.
Awesome. So cool, because I was going to ask you the next question. When did you feel like you knew you were an author? Talk us through that moment. Cause you said you knew about age three, that's awfully young. But when you were pursued, you know, this as a career aspect.
Boy. Well, first I'll tell you when I really recognized the power of writing and felt I could impact people was when I was in the fourth grade. And I was really into Goosebumps, and so I was writing my own short stories. And my teacher was really great, and she would, at story time, nap time, she would read to us all, and people would crash if they wanted to. Well, one time she invited me to read one of my stories to the whole class. And so I got to this cliffhanger, the boy and his dad were fishing, and there was this monstrous fish threatening to swallow the whole boat, and I got to the cliffhanger, and I got all the kids around me, and this kid just jumps up and is like, what happens next, are they gonna make it? And I just thought, wow, that's amazing, you know, that's an amazing feeling to get the kid to leap out of it off the floor. And so I think that's been imprinted indelibly in my mind of what a cool thing that is. As far as when did I think that I could be a professional writer, still kind of figuring that out. It's like touch and go.
It sure is, isn't it? I ask all my authors that question because I think that sometimes that we can get so caught up in doing everything else, we have to just acknowledge that we have a gift and we need to do it and share it. So I love to hear when people come with that moment. And I love that happened to you at a young age with an audience. That's so cool. And I remember Goosebumps. I read those too. I loved them.
Yeah. Well, and there's a great power to reading to a group. or even through, you know, podcast, just reading aloud. I think that's a medium that we too often forget about. And I'm doing a brief workshop tomorrow at Lower Columbia College, and that's going to be my focus, is reading aloud.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of power in that.
There is a tremendous amount of power in it. And it's something that I found, that's one reason why I really wanted to bring authors on to share their work, is because I'm not sure if authors often get that opportunity to do that as much as they need to practice that. It's a skill. I'm fortunate enough that I get it in my working life. I do plenty of public speaking and training. So being in front of an audience is not an issue for me, but reading your own work is really challenging, isn't it? You feel a little bit like you're putting yourself out there. So tell us a little bit about your published works, and name what genre you're writing in, and then give us the titles of your works for the listeners.
Yeah, so I've published two books so far. The first was If We Get There, which is a coming-of-age story about two young brothers who essentially run away from home. One's still in high school. They ride their motorcycles across the country from the Pacific Northwest, and they're heading all the way to Florida, where they've got a cousin who they think they're going to start up this kind of new life with. And along the way, they get into some trouble, and they get stuck in Texas for a while, and I don't want to reveal exactly why. And so it's just about kind of the adventure that I think a lot of people wish they had taken at a young age, and the epiphanies and struggles that people go through on that type of a journey, and then the bond between the brothers, which you know, it's strong and then strained and get stronger and strained, and they're on this perilous journey on the motorcycles, and that was based off a trip that I actually took almost 10 years ago, where I just loaded up my things into a hiking pack and took off across the country. So but I did that trip alone, so I invented a brother to come with me. And so that was my first book, and I self-published that book. And then the second one is just came out on May 18th, it's about the Mount St. Helens eruption. So it's I guess contemporary historical mystery, you could say. It's a bit more literary than your typical mystery, and so it's set in Southwest Washington in 1980 when Mount St. Helens was very active. And this one is published by Laytop Books, which is a publishing company which I founded several months ago. And I kind of say that it's like the publishing company is like Pinocchio. It was this puppet that quickly became a real boy. And now I'll be publishing three more books by some great authors in June, July, and September.
Awesome. And I did take note that you, a couple of things, the Mount St. Helens story, you had it come out on Mount St. Helens anniversary. So very cool. Those of us that lived through that experience, it's still ingrained in our minds, right? I remember it very vividly when Mount St. Helens blew. So super cool. And I'm hoping that's the one you might be reading from. If I cross my fingers that if I could get my hope, that might be it, right?
Yep.
Good.
Yes, that is right.
Good, because we just came through the anniversary of it. And then I thought it was really interesting. When I was looking at your research, I did see that you were this, I was guessing the publishing company was yours. So you're like the perfect person for me to ask some, you know, the questions of going from self-publication, and now you're indie published, but you're indie published with your own publishing company. And so kind of walk me through that. First with the self-publication, you know, what were the biggest obstacles that you found after you did the self-publication part of it?
Mm-hmm. Self-publishing, there's a lot of hurdles. I mean, it's a steep learning curve to figure out how to produce a book professionally. You know, usually there are entire staffs that are doing that for publishing companies. That's a big hurdle, but probably the even biggest hurdle is once the book is finished and published, figuring out a way to market it, to people realize that it's even out there, and for them to, you know, take it seriously. There's sort of still a stigma about self-publishing, and justifiably so, oftentimes. So getting that sense of legitimacy can be a challenge. But I think that if the book is good enough, and if it's done with professional integrity, that people will be willing to take it seriously. And just got to put it out there and hope for the best, I suppose. With all that being said, with the second book, I felt like it had, well, with the first book, I never even tried to go the traditional route, querying agents and such. I just skipped straight to self-publishing. The second book felt like, with Mount St. Helens hook and with the mystery aspect, that it had a bit more mainstream appeal. So I decided I would query agents. And so I probably queried 60 agents and sent them letters and received quite a few invitations to send my work to them. And, you know, you often have to wait several months till you even to hear back from them at all. And basically by the end of it, I had a lot of very complimentary rejection letters. And so I was trying to figure out, you know, what I want to do. Did I want to keep querying? Did I want to start querying small presses? I wasn't sure. Meanwhile, I had been working as a freelance books editor for a number of really great authors, like New York Times bestseller Michael Gurian, Prince Honor author Terry Truman, and some others, and they were also looking to sell some of their find homes for some books that they'd been working on, and so the timing just made me think one morning out of the blue, well, what if I were to start my own publishing company? And really, it's kind of a crazy idea. And I'm still in the process of figuring out how successful it will be, but it seems to be working out so far and getting great reviews from all the books that I've been working on. So it's a heck of a lot of work.
I was just going to say, it must be, because you're going from just your own, right? From your own, managing yourself, your own books, and then moving into, I'm sure you get plenty of samples that are coming your way, so you probably feel, you know, like you want to read those samples and see if there's other authors out there that you can bring under your belt, under your umbrella. It's fascinating to me, and I love the idea of doing it. It's fascinating, but it's so much work for just one author. I've already discovered I don't even have a book out yet with the promotion amount that's out there. So how do you manage that with your authors? Do they do their own promotion? Do you assist them with that? Is your main key thing the editing part of it and the production of the book? So what do you offer to your authors if they work with you?
Yeah. Well, first, you know, I'm really I'm being very selective about the types of books that I'm willing to take on, because I can't help everybody, or I can't spread myself too thin at this point in the game. You know, I do have a team that I'm working with Leita Books, but don't have a massive budget yet. So, you know, I want to make sure that any book that I bring on, I can serve to the best of my abilities to the degree that the book deserves. So, for instance, this year I will be publishing 4 maybe 5 books, and I think that that's manageable. And I provide a lot of assistance on all of those different facets that you had mentioned. So I do all of the editing, and I have a couple other editors who have been working with to assist me with that as well. I do a lot of the design myself, and then I also work with Grey Dog Press in Spokane, a brilliant designer named Marina Glovna, and a couple others to help with the design. Grey Dog Press is printing the books. And then publicity is a combination of things that I can bring to the table and also what the author has at their disposal. So, that's kind of the gist of it. But mainly just want to make sure that with Laytop Books too, the focus is on books which are really emblematic of the West. So I define that as west of the Missouri River. Mm-hmm. And because I think that publishing too often has a very East Coast bias, all the companies are based in New York. And I think there's some great books out in the West that tend to be lost in the shuffle. So I'm hoping to bring
you.
Some of those.
Yeah, I'm finding a lot of amazing authors that might not get a voice and that's why I really tailored my podcast down to the Pacific Northwest. I've been asked already, do you think in the future you'll expand this out beyond regional? And my heart really says no, because there's so many great authors in the Pacific Northwest, you know, in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. That's kind of the picture of the Pacific Northwest that I see that may not get enough attention, and they're fantastic. And I want them to be seen and heard, and I want readers to find them. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was reading a book about publishing, and there's a great line in there that said, "Don't try to be all things to all people."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you spread yourself too thin, you lose your core power. And I think you're spot on. I think that at least for now, just focusing on the Pacific Northwest is great, because there are so many authors that could use your assistance just here in those three states that you mentioned.
Yeah. So tell me from your perspective, because you have a very unique perspective than some of my other authors that have come on. Most of my authors so far that have come on, they either traditionally published or they are self-publishing, but you're melding the two so well as a big project, which is exciting. I love it. But tell me what you would say is the biggest marketing tip you would want to share with somebody like me that's just really getting started out there, you know, an aspiring author thinking about really getting out there and publishing work. What's the big marketing tip you would suggest?
Oh boy. I mean, there are definitely a lot of marketing tips. But I would say that it just really helps if you can get some newspapers, magazines to take notice of you, or any of the big review agencies. So really, with all the books that I'm publishing coming up, sending the manuscript out to, you know, Publishers Weekly, to Library Journal, and then to or any, you know, depending on the subject, to any magazines or newspapers that may be able to find an interest in whatever subject you're writing about and make it relevant to their readership. Because that's a way to broadcast widely. And I think part of the challenge that authors have is finding good ways to advertise and market that don't cost them an arm and a leg. I mean, anybody can, yeah, you could spend thousands of dollars on internet ads or radio ads or whatever, magazines, but if you can get it to an editor of a magazine or a newspaper or to somebody at a review agency and they like your book, well, you know, that's free advertising on a massive scale. So it can be a bit of a crapshoot whether or not that happens, but I really recommend, books are relatively cheap. Mail those books off with a nice personalized letter, and I think people would be surprised how often they're willing to take you up on that. and also getting good endorsements from other authors who maybe have a similar readership to yours, because somebody who reads that author, they find out, oh, they like this book. Oh, I'll take a chance on that author. I've never heard of them, but it's been vouched by this person. I'll give it a try. So there's a couple things that I think are cheap and maybe not easy, but doable for anybody.
I love it. I have a friend who's a PR rep from the industry my husband and I was from, the music industry, and her and I have been doing a lot of talking back and forth. And I kind of wanted to sit there and think to myself, because I'm so into the podcast thing, that I'm like, you know, newspapers are dead, magazines are dead. But she reminded me that they're not, you know, and that they're very active and alive. And you have to be skilled at speaking, you know, their language so that they will pick you up and do a feature. And once a feature comes out, then more people maybe will jump on it. And so I had to step back a little bit and say, yeah, you know, innovation's fantastic and podcasts are great, but there's still a lot of readers that we may never see unless we, you know, reach out to the newspaper. So I'm really glad you mentioned that. It's a fantastic tip. I am working on social media a lot. I feel like the whole podcast and writing is my second job. My social media is my third job. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. Social media is. So do you have your authors, and for you personally as an author, do you spend a lot of time on social media and plugging your work that way?
I do a bit. I mean, I'm always fearful that I'm going to be perceived as an annoying, braggadocious author by all the people who are in my network if I'm just talking about myself all the time. And I'm also not somebody who just naturally gravitates to social media a lot. So I wouldn't say I spend a ton of time, but it is a great way to communicate with a lot of people. But some of the other, one of the other authors that I work with, you know, he loves to be on Twitter. So of course, I mean, if that's like your cup of tea, then I'd say go for it. You know, I think that the thing is not to force it if it doesn't come totally naturally. I mean, I think that it's a tool, but it's good to remember that it's only a tool.
Exactly. Yeah. If you ever get a chance to listen to my earlier podcast, I would talk with some of the authors about my Twitter panic. Because I was never on Twitter ever before I started all this podcast this year and everything. And I went on, I had one follower. It was my mother, graciously followed me years ago. And I created an account for a school thing that I had to do and never went on Twitter. And then all of a sudden I discovered there's amazing author support on Twitter, just fabulous author community there. And it's now the one I gravitate towards because it's really geared towards text and writing, not necessary pictures and memes. And so I really love Twitter, but it was a huge learning curve. I had a whole panic attack over it. I'm like, I got to get on Twitter. I got to be tweeting all the time. It's like, oh my gosh, chill out a little bit. So yeah. So social media can take over our lives. That's for sure. So let's talk about, you know, Twitter kind of is a good, for me, it's been a good support group. Talk to me about you personally as an author. What support groups have you been involved in, either online or face-to-face in your area? Because I like to share those resources for other aspiring authors that might be listening to the podcast. And then on the back end of that, how important are those support groups for you?
Boy, that's kind of a tough one. I'm like a cat. I'm a little bit more solitary. So I was in a creative writing program in college, and that was good in many regards. But since then, I've really just relied on family and friends for feedback, and then also other writers who I've made the acquaintance of over the years, and including, like, I'm still in contact with Jim Lalonde, who's a high school teacher of mine and a great writer. So, like, over the years, I will send him things and get feedback. But, you know, there's not like a a monthly club or something that I go to. For me, it's just like find more quality over quantity. It's like just find a handful of people who you trust. And they don't have to be experts, because not all your readers are going to be experts either. But just people whose opinion you value, and then lean on them. And I also really would advise writers to, as far as like who can support their work, find a really great editor who can help you, even if you have to pay for their services, because it really helps to have somebody who's non-biased and who's not just telling you what you want to hear, making you feel good. I mean, that is definitely useful, but you also need somebody who can tell you the hard truths at certain points. So that's part of the support group too. And, I don't know exactly where I'd recommend somebody find that person, but get access to a good editor. I definitely recommend that.
Yeah, that's something that me and some of my author friends have been talking about, as well as I mentioned it on the podcast. That's my next journey, is to find that editor. I know my husband loves me, and when I read stuff to him or reads my stuff, he loves me, so he's going to tell me how great it is. But I work in education, so I know that you have to collaborate. And some of the best people that help me out are the ones that say, you know, Vicki, this isn't working this way or that way. And I want something that can tell me the truth, so that my readers aren't like, oh, I'm putting this book down because there's a plot hole in it. You know, just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great advice. So for you, being an editor, do you write differently than, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Do you write freely and just let your writing go? Or do you have the editor's hat while you're writing on?
Yeah, I guess the latter. My fiance ridicules me for how slowly I write. You know, it's like two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. You know, I might spend a morning on a paragraph, because it often feels like I can't progress until I have that paragraph right, you know, depending on the section I'm on. So yeah, I would say I'm not really a great free writer. I don't know. And I think that it can work for some authors to just get something down. But for me, I'm very precise. Although not as much as some people. There's a perhaps apocryphal tale of James Joyce, famous author, that he was notoriously a slow writer, and his friend came to his house one day and saw him despondent with his head on the desk, like moaning. And, James, what's going on? And James said, what's going on? What's the problem? He's like, such a horrible day. I only wrote 8 words. And he said, oh, James, 8 words, that's not bad for you. Yeah, but I don't know which order to put them in. And some days I feel like that for me too.
So and I get in the weeds because I'm a researcher by nature. I'm very in that aspect because of my library and background. I get really in the thick of the research. I could spend years on researching my setting and topics and background and my characters and never actually write. And and then I'll write crazy, you know, so bringing it all together is my big challenge. So I'm curious how editors write, because for me, I would think it would be very hard to, as an editor, because you're always thinking about what other people will be reading into it, where some of us just write and then we're like, okay, we got to clean it up.
Yeah. That's definitely true. I definitely, share your feelings about the research, getting into the research. Like I'm researching my third novel, which is about the Wobblies, the industrial workers of the world, who were active in the Pacific Northwest in the early 1900s, and basically been researching them for 2 years. and I don't even feel like I'm anywhere close to starting the book yet. So I feel like I can't write anything until I know exactly what it is I want to write. And then it actually does kind of start come pouring out of me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me ask you one more question before we set you up to share your reading with us, because I'm very curious to hear your story. So as a writer, so not necessarily as the editor and the big project of publishing house, tell me what your inspiration is to keep writing.
My inspiration to keep writing? Well, I just remind myself that if I really nail it and, you know, I tell a story truly, beautifully, that, you know, that it might get to live well beyond my own life and could impact a tremendous amount of people. And so, you know, that keeps me going back to the drawing board and back to the page, and that sense of immortality, I suppose, makes me, you know, inspired and dedicated to keep doing it.
Very valuable inspiration. Honestly, I think that most of us want to leave some sort of legacy behind. You know, these stories are in us, and we want to keep them out there and keep them going, make them alive first, and then leave them as a legacy. So great inspiration. So John, share a background, a little bit of story for those that aren't from Washington State. They might not know what you're writing about. And then I'm going to let you go right into your reading. And then at the very end, I'll take us out.
So this is a reading from Geek Fire Rise, my Mount St. Helens novel. And in this scene, this is shortly after the mountain has become active. And they've closed off part of the road up to Spirit Lake, which is by the mountain. And on this day, the protagonist, Deputy Wilson, and the sheriff, who's the former sheriff of the district which he works in, are driving up there to hopefully get into the sheriff's cabin and get some of his valuables out of the cabin. So Wilson had the day off, and he sat in the passenger seat of the old Chevy as the sheriff drove them up Spirit Lake Highway. The ordinarily tranquil road was now choked with traffic, and at Spirit Lake, it seemed like nothing less than a carnival. Hundreds of spectators lined the highway, and all eyes were on the distant mountain, which was right then sending a billowing white cloud of steam belching some 1,000 feet into the air. Intrepid tourists stood spellbound. Children were pointing and screeching and putting binoculars back to their eyes. Old folks lounged in lawn chairs and sipped from thermoses, while young men walked around hawking any gimmicky trinket they'd found time to slap the half-clever pun upon. Wilson rolled his window down, and as they progressed, several separate melodies drifted from this stereo and that, while he called out for the sheriff the more remote license plates from as far away as Texas and New York and Wisconsin. Overhead, more than 20 small airplanes were buzzing around in a steady circle, their pilots awaiting clearance to approach the mountain. "Boy, this is some kind of spectacle, ain't it?" said the sheriff. "I've never seen anything like it," Wilson agreed. Up ahead, a long line of sightseers waited outside a mobile home some entrepreneur had converted into a barbecue joint. As they passed, the rich, porky smoke wafted by and made their mouths water. "I always hoped I'd live long enough to see her blow," said the sheriff. "Looks like I just squeaked it in." They stopped to let a camper van parallel park, and as they were waiting, a zealous youth thrust a t-shirt up to the passenger window. "Only $5, the boy announced. "What's it say?" asked the sheriff. "It says, Mount St. Helens, lava or leave it. I'll take 2. "Right on. What sizes would you like?" "I'm all out of extra large." "One small and one large," the sheriff said. "Coming right up," said the boy as he dug through his backpack. The boy passed Wilson the t-shirts, and they continued up the highway. 10 miles below Spirit Lake, they arrived at another congestion of vehicles, and then the roadblock. A pair of weary-eyed Calhoun County deputies stood before a sandwich board sign declaring that the highway ahead was closed. One of the deputies began motioning for the sheriff to turn around and head back down the road, but the sheriff only inched his truck closer to the barricade. The deputy shook his head with impatience, strolled over, and leaned in with his hand against the driver's side door. "Can't let you fellows get any closer. Governor's orders." "I own a cabin on Spirit Lake," said the sheriff. "I'd like to clear out my valuables in case we get a big eruption." "In that case, I'm going to need to see some proof of ownership." "They're all back at the house," said the sheriff. "Then I'm sorry, but I can't let you through." "You're telling me I've got to drive all the way home and back and show you my papers just to access my own property?" "I'm sorry, sir. Orders are we've got to see something proving your ownership of property before we can let you through." "This is the United States of America, correct?" The deputy took his hand from the sheriff's truck, stepped back, and folded his arms across his chest. "Sir, if we let every knucklehead through that wanted to get close to that mountain, we'd have about 1,000 citizens out there endangering their lives. Besides that, it's the governor's orders. Take it up with her if you're upset." "Well, this is just asinine," said the sheriff. "Move along," commanded the deputy. Wilson finally leaned into the conversation. "Hello," he said, waving at the deputy. "Let's try this again. I'm Tom Wilson, Clark County deputy, and this is Leslie Jenkins, a former sheriff. Here's my badge. Mind if we get through?" The deputy shifted his stance. His face softened into a smile. "Hell, fellas, that's all you had to say." The last stretch of highway meandered east along the Tule River, which sparkled turquoise in the brilliant midday sun. They were each watching for the mountain, but it was mostly concealed behind a green wall of hemlock, fir, and big leaf maples. Warehouser trucks roared by, intermittently hauling loads of mammoth old-growth trees, and they began to pass clear cuts with signs along the highway reading, "Dear Forest, 2025. "What do you say we go drop in on Harry before we hit the cabin?" the sheriff said as he turned off for Spirit Lake. "I'm curious to see how he's been handling all this craziness." "You mean Harry Truman?" Wilson asked. "Of course. You guys are friends? Something like that?" They passed a sign for Mount St. Helens Lodge and began down the drive in a few inches of lingering snow. They were about 50 yards from the front door when the sheriff stopped and had a chuckle. "I'll be damned if he isn't pulled in court for all that." Harry Truman stood on the porch of his home, half encircled by a flock of reporters and photographers. The leathery octogenarian had his chest puffed up and was gesturing emphatically with a glass of bourbon. His wife now a legend for refusing to leave the lodge that huddled in the shadow of the volcano. "Looks like Truman's becoming a real-life folk hero," Wilson said. "That cantankerous son of a bitch was his own hero before we elected the president that shared his name. And you know what? I'd be lying if I said he hadn't been a bit of a hero to me, too, back when I was a younger man. That old cuss was an absolute pioneer. God, the stories he would tell." "Were they true?" Wilson asked. "Enough of them were." The sheriff had himself another mirthful laugh and then began backing up the drive. "I guess we'll just have to try him again later." The sheriff's cabin was a two-story A-frame built of cedar and surrounded by a weathered deck and a lawn that blossomed with wildflowers in the summer months. At the bottom of the property, a wooden dock stretched out into the lake and supported a three-man canoe upside down against the elements. Beyond this, Spirit Lake was still mostly iced over and stained from the ash that had sifted down from the volcano, towering but a few scant miles from the southern shore. Wilson and the sheriff stood near the lake's edge and watched another small eruption spewing from the volcano's charred crater. The plume expanding and churning and then thinning to wisps as the ash again dusted the mountain's flanks and the woods below. "It's beautiful," said the sheriff. He seemed locked in reverie as the earth began to faintly quiver, a dull rumble emanating from some unaccountable source. They shared an anxious look. "I can think of some other adjectives for it," said Wilson. Yeah. We better get on with it.
Awesome. I think it's great you brought Harry in on the story right away. It was great. Legend there. So thanks, John, so much for coming on the show. And we may have you back or some of the authors from your house, too, later on.
Excellent. Well, it was great to be here. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hoped you loved hearing from the author as much as we did. If you did enjoy the author, make sure you find them on social media. Buy their book and write a review. Are you a published author and would like to be featured on the podcast? Visit us at our website to learn more. You can help support the production of this podcast by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Share the podcast with your friends. And most importantly, become a supporter. Supporters receive monthly bonus podcasts and a newsletter filled with tips from our authors. To find out more how to become a supporter, visit our website. And finally, I hope you always remember to enjoy the journey. Until next week, this is Vicki J. Carter saying goodbye.